Welcome everybody inside the most anticipated reacts of the year. I mean, it was already going to be a big reacts, but oh boy, did it take on new life on hole 17. The World Championships are done, and we have a brand new World Champion 1X, Silas Schultz, who just kept hanging around today, and even with some missed putts and some kind of not super clutch moments, just stayed alive until the opportunity was presented for him to get the win, and he wins in a playoff over Reiners Bellotis, who was just absolutely unbelievable this week. Gutting loss for Bellotis. Charlie and Josh with you. Thank you so much for being with us. Shout out to the nearly 200 people listening live. This is by maybe like double the biggest react we've ever done with live listeners. And can't wait to talk about everything that went down. We're going to go right now and listen to how it went down on 17. So if you're just checking in and you didn't, you know, if you are catching up later and you didn't watch the round or whatever, Bellotis was pretty nails. He made some mistakes in the middle of the back nine to let Silas back within three. And then it was a two shot swing at 15 to get it to one. And then they're kind of going back and forth. You know, you started to see the wheels coming off a little bit, and even some of the shots that like were in bounds looked like they, you know, were a little sketchy. And ultimately we get to 17. He throws his tee shot. He's in bounds, kind of in a weird spot on the right-hand side of the fairway. And let's listen to the audio from DGN in this moment. Here we go.
Silas needs two birdies. Reiners, if he can make birdie right here, his path becomes so, so clear to the world title. A little bit of indecision. No, get up there somewhere. Okay, keeps him on the grid. Pretty fantastic result, considering.
But he stepped right next to his mini. I blatantly saw it. I don't know if anybody else did or not, or what happened. But okay, I'm sorry. I don't want to be that guy, but I saw that. I got to call it.
So that was it.
That's it.
And we then did not get any clarity into what happened or whether the call was seconded until basically they were putting out like 5 minutes later. And it turns out it was a footfall call by Aaron Gossage, and it was seconded by, my understanding is that it was by the marshal. And presumably the marshal is Phil Delaney, who is the head of competition for the PDGA. But I don't know that 100%. So let me be clear. I do not know that 100%. DGPT Mahmood is in the chat. Mahmood Barani is in the chat. Phil Delaney of the PDGA seconded the call, essentially. Now, it was kind of weird. You heard it back. It's my first time listening to it back. It was kind of like like, there wasn't a decisive call. It was like, you know, I don't want to be that guy, but, like, look like you, maybe the foot went past the mini. And then instead of hearing, like, I'm seconding the call, we hear, that's the right call. And ultimately, it is a stroke assessed for a foot fault, okay? And so that cuts the lead to, what, is that, then it's tied after that hole, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
I was so distraught by the fact that I was getting no information from the broadcast.
Yeah, yeah.
That I was distracted from the rest of the golf happening. Uh-huh. So they're tied going into 18, and it looks like it's going to be over because Bellotis is close and Silas is way out of position. He hasn't made a putt from over there. He totally whiffed one earlier, and the guy drills it from 55 feet for birdie. And Bilotis taps in. They go to a playoff. And Bilotis goes out of bounds in the playoff. And that was all she wrote. And Silas Schultz is 1X. Now, there's a lot to get to. I think, Josh, I feel like the first thing we need to establish is whether you think it was a foot fault. Was it a foot fault?
I you know, Charlie, you put up a poll right afterwards in the Discord, and one of the options you had was like too close to call. I'm not sure. It was very close. My inclination is that it probably, like, it looks closer to a foot fault, but the camera angles where the camera has no capture of where the basket is, and the angles of the camera, I don't think are terribly clear. And so I am not sure whether or not it was a foot fault. This is not like the Kristen foot fault that on review,
it was obviously Kristen, a fault.
You think this one was, or Kristen's?
No, I'm talking about Kristen's.
Kristen's, clearly on review, fault. Kristen's was obviously a foot fault. This I don't think is that obvious.
So the first camera angle we see, and you can see these, they were posted in the Discord. The first camera angle you see, it doesn't look like a foot fault.
Mm-hmm.
The second camera angle we see, it definitely looks like a foot fault.
Yeah.
And my thinking, having seen that second angle, is that it was probably pretty clearly a foot fault. If you're going to get it called and then promptly seconded by the PDGA marshal on the card.
Okay.
I think it was probably pretty clearly a foot fault. So, you know, Chad is posting in the chat, how accurate is this line of play? If it's close, it's likely a fault. I mean, I do think it's within the range of ambiguous that it feels very uncomfortable to see this called. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mountain Lifer thinks I'm wrong and that the second angle was not clear. Now, to be clear, right, let's remember what the rule is. It's about the line of play to the basket.
Yes.
So it could be that it looks like a foot fault, but it's not because of where the basket is. But the basket is up around the corner and then kind of like back to the left. So I don't think it's like dramatically off of the line of play. My feeling is, having looked at it, and there's some people in the chat who said they were there. Now they're just people in the chat, so, you know, take it with a grain of salt. But they said they thought it was a foot fault. But then other people are saying, pros saying, it definitely wasn't a foot fault. Like, obviously, it wasn't. This is not a slam dunk case.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I if someone wanted to argue that they feel like it, like, if you, Charlie, if you said like 60-40 in favor of foot fault, then like that would be fine. Like, I'm not upset about that. I don't think the problem, and I think what we're gonna get to, Charlie,
Let's just do it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, well, let's talk about whether this should have been called.
I don't know who put it in the chat, but someone mentioned, they said, like, we go 89 holes without seeing a foot fault call, and then we call it halfway through 17. And that, to me, is like, it's what we said with Kristen, and to me is the biggest travesty right now, is that, like, why do we not have consistent enforcement of rules all tournament and then call it on 17 when it's that close? Like, that to me is like, it's unacceptable.
It's the same reason that, you know, like, a tiny bump on a last second layup attempt in the NBA is not called. It's because it feels awful to have the tournament feel like it's being decided by a call. And especially so when the person who is initiating the call is not the marshal and is in fact a player. And that player happens to be on the same manufacturing sponsor as the player who is going to benefit from the enforcement of the call. And I think people are reasonably asking in the chat, what if this was Silas who is in this spot, is Goose calling it? Now, yeah. To me, you get to the bigger level here, which is like player calls in general. What's crazy is like, when's the last time that you can even remember a player making a call on coverage?
Right. Right.
Of any kind.
I like can't.
Of a footfall, yes. Whatever, you name it.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Like when was the last call? Like, let me give you this. We had an instance a few months back where Ricky Wysocki goes in front of his lie, unmistakable, and moves a bundle of sticks out of his lie, clearly breaking the rules. Clearly breaking the rules. And what happened there? We get a discussion about it. Gannon says, you know, it looked like you moved those sticks. And Jeff Springs right there, they all saw him move the sticks. They all know that you can't move the sticks. And what happened is that we kind of just go, I don't know. I'll let you have it.
Right.
Clear as day. And here, we're trying to like get the Blair Witch footage to see if it was a footfall.
Right.
And it basically decides this tournament going to a playoff.
Yes. Oh, now, it does decide this tournament.
Credit to Silas Schultz, who was there to take advantage of the situation. And I don't blame him one bit. And he didn't second this call. And all he did was play great disc golf and gave himself an opportunity in the end.
Yep.
And hilariously said, like scripted like 20 times in his interview, which I just thought was hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Ricky did say we were going to go to war today, and we're going to war.
Lance says the last time that he remembers, and I don't, maybe it was DDO, but Lance says 2 years ago, Haley King tried to call a footfall on Missy. Do you remember that?
Yeah, well, that was like a garbage time, zero meaningless situation.
It was. But that was the last player call I remember on coverage.
And some people in the poll that I put up, there were, I don't know what the percentage was. How do I go back and find that? I posted it a long time ago, so it's like buried because the chat was insane today. Shout out to everybody who was in the chat. I'm going to try to scroll back and find the poll. If someone has a screenshot of it, you can go ahead and drop it in here. Because there were some people who were like, it was a footfall. It was the correct call. Should have been called. Now that number of people is not significant. Oh my God, dude, the chat has been so crazy. Oh, let's see. I'm almost there, but I just feel like, I mean, clearly public opinion is very squarely against this being called.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, go online anywhere right now. You go on Goose's Instagram comments. You go on Reddit.
He's getting crushed.
Like 9-1, 10-1. Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, I actually, in some weird way, it kind of takes some pretty serious stones to make that call if you're Goose.
Okay.
It's not like if you're afraid of the blowback, you don't make that call. That doesn't mean that I think it should have been called. This is such a crazy way for this tournament to end. I finally found the poll. 10% said fault, good call. 20% said fault, shouldn't have been called. 61% said it was too close to call. And 8% said it's not a fault.
Yeah. It's... And the worst part is like... Am I really supposed to believe that Aaron Gossage has not seen a footfault, time violation, or what have you in any of the time that he's been on coverage in the past 3, 5, 10 years? Because I've never seen Goose make a call before. It's just, if Goose wanted to, like, he could build his brand saying, like, he could come in right now, it would make him wildly unpopular, but he could say to his card, listen, guys, I really think that we need to do a better job as players enforcing the rules. I watch for footfalls. And the thing is, I guarantee, because Reiner threw a shot on 18 and it was another very close one, but nobody said anything. I thought it was worse on hole 18 than it was on 17. No one said a word. And so here's my thought. Are you telling me that Reiner seriously didn't have that foot fault, that same, because he steps a bit to the left. And so are you telling me that he didn't have that all round long until hole 17? I might go watch because I just don't buy it. I don't buy it. And so it means that we have waited until one of the most pressure moments of the round when it's like coming down to the wire, and that's when we make the call.
Oh my gosh. It just feels bad to have something decided on what feels like a very, very, very slight technicality.
Mm-hmm.
Like yes. If you can't really tell on coverage, like it just feels awful to have that call made. Especially when this stuff is let go 99% of the time.
99.9%.
Yes. Be the second to last hole of a 5-round world championships is just stunning.
It's
just stunning.
It's stunning. I don't. And here's the problem. And this is like, I'm trying to like separate my feelings on this. Because I think part of what's difficult here is like Goose is clearly having a bad round. He's not happy. He's had bad calls go against him before. He has a teammate on the card. Like it's so hard for me to write in any positive or like good faith motives for doing this. And that might be because of who called it. It might be because of just the situation. I don't know if it would be different if it was someone else, but the combination of how likable the guy it was called against, how very much like in like this very alone position, right? It's again, I think everyone has said, would he have called it on Silas? Would he have called it on Ezra Aderholt? I don't know. I don't think he would have. And so I don't know about that. And for it to be so close, it feels so bad. This feels awful. This feels awful. I was emotionally devastated for Reiner that he lost in this way.
It's brutal. I mean, here's the thing. I frankly think he lost his tournament because he started to fail to execute his shots.
He got tired, and he said that. Yes.
I mean, he says he got tired. Whether that's true or he got mentally fatigued, which is what I think it was more likely to be. Mm-hmm. He made some big mistakes. He made some decisions that were not smart. I think he could have played a little more conservatively on 15 and taken a par. Yep. I think he could have, you know, that you can go back to into previous points in the tournament maybe and think about some spots where maybe he was too aggressive. A 90 hole disc golf tournament does not come down to 1 foot fault, right? So I know the timing of it is brutal. And here, that's the biggest problem for me. I understand, like, if it was so obvious that it was clearly a foot fault, that Goose had to call it, and it had to immediately be seconded, it must have been way more clear in person than it is on camera. And I accept that that's possible.
I agree.
Now, we saw, I want to go back up because I just saw a comment about this. Someone who was there, Sean, said, I spoke with two of my crowd control line guys on the card. He was there helping coordinate volunteers and folks. After everything settled and they were convinced it was a foot fault, one shot video of it and it was very close. Without instant replay eyes, no way I would call something that close in real time. Now, again, the angle that the card and the marshal are at maybe is different. What I have to say this because I feel like it's germane to the whole thing here.
Okay.
I was incredibly frustrated with DGN today. I thought it was a tough round for the commentators and the production team.
Yeah, I agree.
And obviously I work with these folks. Everybody works super hard. It was a difficult situation, and who knows what they were dealing with because we never heard from Perkins. Maybe his mic was messed up. We went for long stretches of the end of this round where like things weren't being explained or talked about. I mean, Terry had a situation where he said a shot had been thrown when it hadn't been thrown from the woods coming out on 15. And like, it was never clarified whether there was a second shot thrown. I was very frustrated by this element of it because I felt I was being distracted from being able to understand the basic nuts and bolts of what was going on the ground. And that made it that much more difficult to follow what was happening.
To be clear,
the commentators are watching what we watch. Yep. So it's not like they have some hidden special feed. And they're only able to get the information that's being given to them from the ground. And maybe that information wasn't passed through. But it was hard.
I'm not 100% sure this is the reason why, but my speculation is so, and Harry points out, Philo did this too. Terry kept making calls while the disc was still in the air and being wrong. Like, oh, this is going in, and then missed. And then, oh, this is going out of bounds, and then it stayed in bounds. And I think part of the reason why, and this is my speculation, Philo would not stop talking. And it felt like Terry and Philo were competing to see who got the play-by-play call on every single hole. It was exhausting. It was exhausting.
Yeah, there were some tough moments there. I mean, it's one thing to miss a like an OB call or something, but you know, to not at least be like, we're not sure if that was a footfall.
Right.
What did that get seconded? Like, yeah. Be with us as the fans who are watching at home. Like, what is happening here? Right.
Hey, we're calling down to the guys on the ground. We will let you know as soon as we have something.
Yeah, we haven't been informed yet. We're working on it. We've got Perkins sprinting over there right now. Like, we're going to find out what's going on. Oh, on PDGA, it's showing as a violation. So we believe that it's a footfall. We're still waiting for confirmation. Any of that. But there was nothing. But they didn't acknowledge that it existed. And that was driving me crazy today. Oh, my gosh.
It was bad.
Holy smokes. I guess I don't know that I have that much more to say. I mean, folks, if you have a take in the chat, Jenna had one earlier I want to go back to. You know, players shouldn't make calls. I am really open to that. Like, I don't know how we get to that point, because it's not realistic to never have players make calls at professional disc golf events, right? It's like, it's basically not possible. But you could have a rule that says marshals must initiate calls when you're on X, Y, and Z cards in these situations or something.
Or if you have a marshal on the card.
Yeah.
Marshal on the card. And someone else is pointing something else out, which I also don't, like, I'm not understanding. If Phil saw this as a clear footfall, he should have initiated the call.
Well, right.
He shouldn't be waiting for Goose to bring it up and then being like, okay.
But guess what? Let me tell you this. He's not calling that, because it's not the spot to make that call.
That's exactly. And if he wasn't going to call it to begin with, he shouldn't have seconded Goose's call. If he saw it and thought, man, I think that might have been a footfall, but I'm not going to say anything right now, then he shouldn't have seconded it. It's a huge mistake. I think the call was a huge, huge mistake. It's a mistake for Goose, and I think it was a mistake by Phil if he's the one who seconded it.
Owl says Marshall only calls for the top four cards starting round two of every tournament.
Fine with me.
I mean, I think this is a kind of thing that I think is a reasonable way to remove this ambiguity. Because I promise you, and I'm not saying it had anything to do with today's situation. I genuinely think Aaron Gossage is going to be like, I did the right thing. I saw a violation. I called a violation. The guy's a straight shooter. I mean, you might not like the call. You may not like Aaron Gossage, but the guy's a straight shooter. We've had him on the podcast. He is like intensely like about the book, kind of almost to a fault. Now, I know wasn't he complaining about getting called for the time warning?
Yes.
Maybe he was like trying to complain because he didn't feel like he'd addressed his lie or something. But that's obviously what it was. That was a situation at the Pro Tour Championship. He took like 2 minutes to make a throw. The problem is, I guarantee you, players do not call their friends on violations.
Yep.
I promise. It doesn't happen. And again, I don't think like Goose and Silas, there's not some conspiracy here, okay?
Agreed.
I don't even know if those guys are homies. But
I also want Silas to catch no flack from this.
This has nothing to do with Silas. This has to do with like the fact that stuff is not called with any kind of consistency by players at all times, right?
And then,
so when we get these calls that only seem to pop up when we're in the absolute biggest spots, it feels unfair, even if the call is technically correct.
Here's the worst part about this, Charlie. You ready? I'm at the point. I don't care. I do not care if we can't have a Marshall on every card. I don't care about like the way that we've always officiated the sport. This is too big to leave it to this kind of nonsense. We are talking about a $10,000 difference in payout for a man who comes from a country where the median annual income is $20,000. He just earned the median annual income for his country, and it would have been 10K more had he won. That's not to mention the sponsorship opportunities, the disc royalties, the touring for next year, the many implications that come down from this gets robbed of somebody who may never find themselves in this situation again.
And literally taking money from his family.
Yes. Charlie, it's like,
you're not wrong.
This matters now. This matters. This matters too much.
It does.
The sport has gone too big.
Beyond the purse money.
Yes.
Imagine how much money this guy makes if he wins versus finishing second. It's not just the purse.
Put up
a commemorative disc.
Yes.
It's the bonus in his contract.
Yes.
People are never going to remember this guy.
Bro was fundraising to try and pay to make it to this tournament. And he could have changed. Like, listen, this second place is amazing. And I hope he gets so much credit for it. And if they put up a commemorative disc for him or just like a tour series disc, I will buy it tomorrow. But first and second place is a mile different. And to let something that matters this much go on this kind of a rules officiating is an awful look for the PDGA.
It's wild. It's really wild. I feel like it saps the moment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be the only thing that is talked about from this tournament.
Yep.
And I mean, here we are. We're 30 minutes deep into this or something, and we're still talking about it because this is just the thing that you have to address. Wow. Crazy, man. I here's the thing. Remember this, okay? This is an entertainment product at this point,
mm-hmm.
right? Yep. So it matters for these people because they're literally professionals. This is how they make their living. And it matters to the business of particularly the Disc Golf Network and the Disc Golf Pro Tour, but sort of secondarily to the PDGA. I know that's not their main mechanism for like making money, but this is an entertainment product. And this element, right, it's very controversial. It's going to get clicks. It's going to get talking about, you know, and maybe in the long run, it's actually a good thing for the elements. But
yeah.
This makes people feel like it's cheap and unfair. And whether you like it or not, even if you think it was the correct call and it was by the book and you love that part, we did a poll in our Discord and 10% of people thought it was the correct call and should have been called.
Yeah.
10%. That means 90% of people think it was a bad call or shouldn't have been called. And so people are outraged by the whole situation. And I think that feels so brutal to have the only call of the weekend that we see on coverage, right? I think there was some time warnings given, but no strokes. The only call is like a decisive one on the second to last hole of the tournament. It's brutal, man.
It's so bad. It's so bad. And somebody mentioned, and that kind of like a couple of people mentioned jokingly, but otherwise, like, there's betting on this. If you're going to have like actual sports betting on this product, you've got to figure this out. You have to. Oh man.
Crazy. That's something else. All right. Let's talk about the rest of it.
Should we jump to FPO for a minute?
How I think we in should. The world? No. I want to talk more about the actual disc golf. How did Silas win this tournament? The guy airballs the putt that he needs to make a few holes earlier to get a stroke.
Uh-huh.
He's like fluffing shots that are somehow like hitting trees and falling inbounds by like 3 inches. This was divine intervention. And I think Silas might believe it. Like, this was crazy stuff. And the guy, you got to give him credit. He managed to take advantage of the situation. And I said it early in the round. I was like, Silas is hanging around.
He is. He shot a fantastic round.
Belotus could not miss until like hole 13. When did he take his first bogey? And when he needed it the most, he drilled a putt that I don't think you ever would expect him to make. And he absolutely nailed it.
He did. He absolutely did. And you know, we talk about like there was a really bad circle one miss for Silas. A really bad circle one miss. Harry's posting this, I think, now for the third time because he wants to make sure it is seen. There was a poll in our Discord about whether or not Silas was going to make the final putt when we heard it was a 50-footer. And 94% of people said no. I mean, he chained out from 15 feet. He airballed a 35-footer. But outside of those two putts, he looked great. He putted 9 for 11, get rid of the one. It means he only missed one C1X putt. It was 2 for 4, including the big one. He hit the fairway on 14 of 19. He was inside circle in regulation on 14 out of the 18 holes. He scrambled every single time that he was out of position. Silas played a fantastic round of disc golf. And like the one, you know, it's, I wish that if he was going, like, I wish that we had gotten rid of the call and that if Silas was going to win, it had happened without the drama, because I think that like Silas deserves all the credit for sticking around here, for playing a big game and making sure that he was in position to take advantage on hole 17 and hole 18, where he played those two holes perfectly. He played them well and took advantage of his good luck. And listen, Belotus had some good luck earlier on too. He hit a tree on hole 5 that kept him from going OB when Silas did go OB. And he made the putt and got advantage. Like, so disc golf got the little bit of luck, and it's about whether or not you can capitalize on that. And Silas did. And he played a great round of disc golf, and it's congratulations to him as a world champion.
Yeah, I mean, when he had to get birdies at the end of that round, he got them.
Yeah.
Yep. And after all of the, you know, this like the stroke it's given and it's like pin drop silent and everyone's wondering what the hell's going on, he dots an upshot for the birdie from 10 feet. And then obviously, like, he looks like he's well out of position on the 18th and he drills the longest putt of the day, 55 footer. He'd made one C2 putt earlier, but he missed a couple of circle one putts. I mean, it's not like, overall on the weekend, he had a good putting weekend. And that's Silas Schultz, right? Like, if he's putting well, he's going to be in contention. Unbelievable thrower.
Yep.
And so, you know,
Belotus,
after all of the great play, right? He birdies, 8 of the first 9 holes. He's got a monster lead at this point. I think he's up, was he up 6? I've been up 6.
Five.
And so then it goes 5 3, back to 4, then to 2, then to 1, then to down 1.
I don't think he was ever down 1.
Wrong. Must have been 5. Either way, the guy, he can't miss, right? And he's drilling putts too. He hits the 42 footer at the 4th. Unbelievable. Epic stuff. Then he hits the 40-footer at the 9th. But then, the rest of the way, he goes 1 over. He was 1 over in the back. I mean, that's what it is. Like, he slowed way, 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 way down. And it was hard to perceive that he was slowing way down because Schultz wasn't birdieing that much, who was really the only person who could catch him. And the bogeys were being spread out and they weren't doubles or anything, but it was this slow bleed that slowly let Silas back in, and then obviously the drama of 17 and 18.
Reiner ran out of gas That is really what that back nine felt like. It didn't even feel nervy. Like the forehands that were coming out looked just like tired, and like they just didn't have any energy behind them. I guess it's a synonym of tired, but whatever. You get my point, right? He didn't fall apart on the putting green. Dude is lights out putter. Andrew Marwade used to be the guy. Put that away. It's Reiner now. That man is electric on the putting green. And in the biggest moments, that putt did not leave him. And that is a lot of credit. Because I think that, to me, suggests that his mental game is also something that should be commended. It really feels like he physically was running out of gas. And that is what caught up with him. Toboggan is a grueling course. And he talked about how the night before, he was so wound up that he had a hard time getting rest. But I really think that he is nails and should get a lot of credit for that, and just ran out of gas in that back nine after five rounds.
When you zoom all the way out, he shot a 7 under.
Yeah.
I think coming into the day, if you could have told him, hey, right now, you don't have to play the round, I'll give you a 7 under, he'd probably take it.
Yeah.
Silas shot a 10.
You know what the worst part is, Charlie?
Silas shot a 10 with some pretty brutal missed putts.
Reiner shot an eight without the penalty stroke. And yeah, we said and an eight.
That's the number we said.
Yeah. That is the number. Yeah. I said maybe seven, but you said eight. So credit to you because you said eight, and eight would have won
it. You're right. You're right. It's wild, but to be fair, right? He was 8 under at the turn.
Yeah. Right.
He finished 7 under. Yes. And that's why he lost his tournament in the end.
Yes.
It's hard. It was hard for me to feel energized and excited by like Silas hitting the putt and going to the playoff and winning in the playoff, and all his boys are going crazy and he's giving his victory speech, because it just felt like an injustice had been done, even if the call was technically correct. Like I'm just telling you how I feel.
I agree. Yep.
And I can't shake that feeling, even having spent like 20 minutes walking back to my house to come and do the pod, and here sitting here talking about it now.
Here's an addition to it. I'm even like more upset in terms of like the emotion, the reaction, like the booth not addressing it, I think makes it made it significantly worse. There's like pretending that nothing had happened meant that we all were just so like angry about it. And we just wanted someone to talk about something, and they weren't. And so it is such a hard, like bitter. It's just such a bitter sweet taste, because I love Silas Schultz. Charlie, I think we both have disc track discs still from Silas.
On back of my wall.
Yeah. That's right. But those discs are great.
Once I unbox my home.
I love Silas. I think Silas is great. I think he's a great person on the pro tour. Everyone seems to love him. I think he's hilarious. And we had him on fairly recently, and I really enjoy, we had him on before Big Easy Open. I like Silas a lot. And so it just is so hard that like, I have to feel so conflicted about the way that it went down, because I should have been overjoyed at either one of them winning. To either one. And that's just not how I felt, because I felt like, to your, like Charlie, I think you said it right.
I feel like almost unfair to Silas.
A little bit.
Like this was unfair to Silas. And I'm sure he's like, whatever, I don't care. I'm the world champion now. 1X, baby.
Send me those royalty checks and all. Yeah.
I just think, when there's hard discussions to have on the air, I think sometimes, because everyone is so connected in the sport and these are people that they know, that they play with, that they talk to all the time, it can be difficult for them to come out and just straight up give their opinion. You know, I think you got to be willing to come out and give the opinion. Mm-hmm. And even if your opinion is absolutely great call by Aaron Gossage, you can see in this replay, he stepped past the mini. It was seconded by the marshal, but like, we didn't even have the basic facts, right?
Right.
We're having to piece it together. Like, who seconded it?
Here.
And I think that they did. I feel like basically Sexton and Philo, not super intensely, but at the time when we got the replays, essentially said, this is too close to call and it shouldn't have been called. That was what I took away from what they said, even if they didn't say that with like a lot of an explicit clarity.
But, and I think you're right, Charlie, that that's what they were getting across. But I'm sorry, if your three commentators are going to literally have tears in their eyes because of how emotional and heartbreaking it is for Reiner, you have to say something. They didn't do their jobs by putting, by hemming and hawing around this. And I get that they don't have the facts yet, and so they can say that. But once it was confirmed, as commentators, it is their job to tell us how they are feeling about it. To say, oh my gosh, they're going into 18. Reiner just had a call that we'd never see on the Pro Tour called against him. He is going to have to battle the emotions of this. It feels like this immense emotional weight hangs on us now. Like, they had a responsibility to do that.
Yeah, I just feel like the discussion of it was not done enough, and we never really like went back to it in the interviews at all. Like, I feel that both Silas and Reiner should have been asked about it in the interviews. Like, how do you not address what was the biggest moment of this round? Like it or not, it's that and Silas is put on 18 that were the biggest moments in this round. And I feel like you just have to ask about it, even if it's uncomfortable.
Yes. Yes. That is your job. And Reiner can say, I don't want to talk about it. Right? That can be his answer. And that is a completely appropriate answer.
You have to ask the question.
You have to ask the question.
Oh boy. Craziness. Okay. Let's zoom out and to a little more MPO stuff, just really quick. Shout out to Zach Nash for a monster round. Dog of the day. Dog of the day. 13 under par.
Yep.
Crazy, and finishes on the podium alongside Isaac Robinson and Jake Mon, who all tied at 32 under. Jake Mon, amazing weekend. Zach Nash, amazing weekend. Obviously, Belotus, he's going to be clearly, if he commits to playing, you know, professionally in Europe or in Europe and the U.S. He's obviously got unbelievable talent and showed off so much heart this week. He basically, you know, co-won the tournament, right? He was tied in regulation.
Yeah.
And playoffs are playoffs. But tremendous showing from him. And I think everybody's going to remember his name now.
I hope so. I really hope we get to see more of him on tour. It goes to speak, and I will say, I think this is part of the like appeal of making sure that we have European worlds more frequently. I can't imagine how many Reiners there are out there in this world that just can't make it to the US to come play worlds. How many fantastic, amazing European and probably elsewhere, right? Not just Europe, but other places in this world where there are fantastic disc golfers. And I hope that there is a big takeaway from this weekend that we need to be doing more to continue to showcase the sport at the highest level for international players.
Couple other things. What does this mean for Silas Schultz moving forward?
Oh, man. Okay. Well, the win's obviously big. I think what's noteworthy, though, and we talked about it a little bit a while ago, Charlie, Silas in July of 2025, and I can go, we'll go back even a little further. From February of 2025 to June of 2025, Silas was 1020 rated. He has since jumped to 1033. It was only September, it was only 2 years ago in 2024 where he's 1009 rated. I think that Silas is continuing to play better. We're seeing him on this like rise in terms of his level. He's now currently 1033 rated. And this is obviously going to be a big moment in terms of career and the benefits and like sponsorship that we've always talked about, that we always talk about. But it also is another like part along Silas's journey as becoming a very, very relevant name in disc golf. And I think we're just going to continue to see that increase.
I was muted. Pretty sick. He was having the best, he's been having the best career season of his career. Sorry.
Yes.
The mute got me messed up.
And he's 10th at Champions Cup.
And so this is just, I think, a validation for what he's capable of when, you know, he has a good putting weekend. And such an awesome quote there at the end, by the way, about him being like, his mom said,
yeah,
never leave it low in the cage.
And mom didn't raise somebody who puts it in the cage.
Yeah, incredible. Incredible. And I love what he was saying about like visualizing himself winning. Mm-hmm. Just having these moments where he's like, he knew he was going to win and he fought all the way to the end. And that's what you have to do. You have to just keep fighting. Even when the guy you're playing against cannot seem to miss.
Yeah.
It would have been easy for everybody to give up with 9 holes to play.
Yes. It absolutely would have.
Okay. Let's see. Hyatt Zur says, I was about to ask if Silas is the first MVP sponsored world champion, but then realized I'd be pulling a Charlie if I did. Okay, let's see. Gannon, Ricky, Barella, all finish in the top 10. Calvin Heimberg is at 11. Eagle McMahon is at 12. Why couldn't any of the big names get it done this week?
It's easy to, I think it's easy to group them together. Because we have, someone says forgetting someone. Did you mention? I don't know. Maybe they're talking about something else. Anyway, I think it's easy to group them together, but I think the story is a little bit different for each of them. Whether it be, you know, some players having just like one round that was like so bad that it didn't, that it kind of keeps them out of contention, or players that just kind of consistently ended up shooting below their rating. I don't know if it's a pressure thing, but for example, Gannon hasn't really looked in form for a little while now. And so we kind of expected him to turn it around because he's the world number one and he seems to do it in the most important moments. But this actually felt quite similar to how Gannon's been playing recently. He played his entire, every round below his event rating or before below his rating.
Just played good, not great.
Yes. And so I think the story is actually a little different for each of them, but all in all, it's a case of, one of those guys we take for granted because it's usually the case where one of those guys pops up and plays, you know, an excellent tournament well above their rating. And that just didn't happen this weekend. And if you don't, there are the talent is deep enough right now in disc golf that there are going to be people who will step up to that.
All right. Let's talk a little FPO. Okay. Holy smokes. Are you serious right now, Evelina? I did say yesterday, I was like, I think it's more likely that Evelina rolls away from this than that she loses the tournament. And did she ever roll away from the field? She wins by 17 strokes over Missy Gannon with a 14 under 1057 rated final round. I mean, this was just an insane performance from Evelina. That was with 2 C1 misses, by the way. 3 for 5 from C2. Birdies, I think it was 10 in a row from 7 to 16. Just a disgusting domination in the way that like it felt like when Kristen won European Open a few years back, where like it was just over. And the only reason we didn't already all 100% agree that it was over yesterday is because we've seen Evelina have putting problems. Folks, it's done. This is the new number one player in the world.
Yep.
The putting problems might be a thing in the past.
It sure feels like it. A couple of things for context. I'm pretty sure I'm trying to remember the graphic. I know this was the largest margin for like a world's win recent in modern history. I think it was the case for any major. I was looking, the highest event rating at a major was Paige Pierce at US Women's at that weird goofy one in California. Where she shot a 1024, 0.33 event rating. Right now, Evs is a 1023 with the 1057 round today. So barring any adjustments, it would be the second highest rated major ever in FPO history. And outside of pages 1024, which again, I'm not happy about that California course. So cut that out. The next best major rating is Kristen Lott at 1013 rated 2023 Worlds. Crushed the numbers when it comes to like performances in the past. I mean, she absolutely smashed it.
Unbelievable. On 17 shots over Missy Gannon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is insane. So where does this rank for her? She's 1023 event. That's got to be one of her best of all time. I'm going to pull it up right now on StatMeter.
Right? It's got to be.
It maybe is her absolute best of all time. Let's take a look. Event rating. Bigger than 1020. That's not. Earlier this year at the All-A Open, she averaged 1027.
No.
But, you know, it's just, it's obviously different at this tournament with this field and with the, you know, the compression of the ratings. Obviously, I think it's easy to say this is the best win of her career from a, you know, just like what it means and everything. She's now a two-time world champion. I think she's clearly the player of the year if the season ends today. I think at this point, it's going to be tough for Silva to make a comeback in that department, just the way she's been playing.
How much stock would you put in a throw pink win for Silva?
I mean, I'd put stock in it. I think it's still like possible if like Silva goes crazy down the stretch here. Because it was close coming in because Silva had more majors than Ev, but now that's tied and Evelina gets the big one. But I and the Finnish domination of FPO continues.
Once we have throw pink, if ever Silva win throw pink, it's a Finnish sweep of the majors.
Crazy. I mean, this is just like, it really is this simple. Evelina has been the best thrower on tour since COVID. And she was an unbelievably bad putter. Now she's not. She's putting at the average or slightly above average. She gained strokes this weekend in the putting green.
And
so then goodbye. Like this is what happens. Especially on a course like Toboggan where she just has a monster advantage.
If she starts putting league average and circle two putting.
Oh my God.
We might
fun to watch. It's gonna be fun.
It might be worse. If she starts hitting circle two putts, put it away. Like why even watch FPO at that point? That's league average in both circle one and circle two. Cause that was the other thing too, right? Is that it was always, it's like, okay, now she's league average in circle one or just above, but she can't make a circle two putt and 3 for 5 today. It is, she continues to level up her game and that should terrify the rest of this field.
All right, let's take a look at it.
Former number one, Silva Saarinen.
Evelina, fourth best round on day one. Second best round on day two, behind one shot behind Missy's 12 down. Best round on day three. Second best round on day four. And obviously, by far, the best round on day five.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't quite like total crushing domination, but it was pretty close.
Yeah, it was close.
And she never played this course, by the way, Toboggan, before this week.
Yeah, trust me. I know.
Kyle says the right thing. So true. Wish we could watch prime Evelina and prime Kristen Lott go head-to-head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we're watching prime Ev right now.
Yep.
But she was in putting disaster class territory when Kristen was dominating. Jibin, good call. Before the tournament, the server voted that 75% putting was enough to give her a 90% win chance. She putted 73% for the week and won by 19 shots. It was 17 shots, right? Not 19, but point taken.
Okay, but, and I was making this point a second ago, Charlie. I didn't have Ev at a 25% circle two putting rate. I thought 75 and zero. That's the problem here, right? It's like I wasn't prepared for her to also be a circle two putter.
I haven't looked yet, but I think she could have missed every single C2 putt and still won.
Oh, she could have. It was five of them.
She made five of 21. So that's she merely wins by 12 shots if she misses her circle two options.
She went positive strokes gained in circle two. When was the last time that happened?
I can't get over the fact that like the entire narrative, the entire tournament was turned by a call. That's crazy. Like if Bellotas wins, it's just like the first European MPO major winner ever, a dude who's ranked like in the 90s in Stat Mando rankings, who's never played in the US. It would have been completely insane. I meant worlds.
The Ken Dog said just before you did that, he said, can we start chastising Goose again now? Oh man. I don't want to do it again, Charlie. I need a night to, or a couple.
I know. We gotta just let this one settle for a couple days, and maybe we're gonna get some more info. You know, like
I hope still so.
Feel like I didn't get. I never felt like I had the full information.
Hey, Charlie. I'll say it right now. Here's what I think we should do. I'd love to. I know we've been trying. I'd love to try and get Ev on again. We gotta keep trying that. Gotta try and have Silas on. Bring Phil on. Let's talk to Phil this week. I want to know what happened. I want to know what the plan is so that this kind of stuff doesn't happen again moving forward. Bring him on. Let's talk to the director of competition, the PDGA.
Let's just get everybody together. Bellotas, Gossage, Phil, Silas, the broadcasters. All right, guys.
That's our off-season round table. Oh man,
crazy stuff, man. All right, dog of the day, FPO, who you got?
I don't know. None. Ev, that's not allowed. We didn't have a vote.
Ev.
I needed to start a vote in order to get permission to give it to Ev, because I don't know.
You can go dog of the tournament too if you want. I'll give you that if you don't want to go of the day.
Sure. Okay. Of the tournament, it's we've given it to her, but it's got to be Rebecca Dawn, right?
Yeah, it's the Dawn. I like the Dawn.
I like the Dawn.
The Dawn great. Is a good nickname for her.
The Dawn is a good nickname. The Dawn's the dog of the weekend.
Yeah. With a special shout out to Missy Gannon for totally bouncing back off of a pretty lackluster season and at least making it interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way, Holland and Silva finished fourth and fifth. Wild.
That's Holland doing Holland things. Am I right? Top five finish for Holland Hanley. Stop me if you've heard this one before. Anyway.
Zerable, 999 rated event to lose by 17 is wild.
Oh my
God. Yeah, man. Like Missy played good this week. She played really good. It just wasn't gonna happen with the way Evelina was playing.
Yeah. I was gonna talk. I don't know if I mentioned this really fast. If not, I want to just mention real fast. Only four Americans in the top 10. Got a Canadian, a couple of Finns, got an Estonian, the Swede.
I'm just used to that.
I know, yeah, but
how about Forsch, Lettamaki, and I didn't say her name all week, but Anneli Togias Moniste finishes in the top 10.
Yep. And
top 22 international.
That's what I was about to say.
Jakova, Sten, Pexena.
Yeah.
Klasberger just got 21st.
Yep. Really, really exciting international showing this weekend at Worlds for FPO. Call, like, we're getting used to it, but I don't ever want to like start taking it for granted, because I think it's really something special about our sport.
The youth movement is coming. It's not here yet, but it's coming. Like this group of players is going to define the future in FPO. The problem is Evelina Salonen might just be hitting her prime, and she's not all that old, folks. Yeah. Hit the article. How old's Evelina?
I think she's 27.
God, I love the article.
I
she turns 27 this year. She's got at least 5 years of this in her if she keeps putting.
Oh, yeah.
Paddle tournament next weekend. I don't know if that's a joke. It's probably not. She's probably skipping Idlewild to play paddle, which is sick. She said it in her interview. Okay, I admittedly did not watch much of FPO. I checked the scores and I was like, all right, I'm good. I don't need to watch this.
I did not watch the interviews. I had it up, but I did not watch the interviews. It was like, oh, Ev's on 18. We're tapping out. All right. Thanks, everybody.
All right. Well, fun stuff. It's a weird one. I wonder how everyone's going to feel about it in a couple of days. We're all going to have to just soak in the takes and the commentary from the next few days. Josh and I will be back, of course, to talk about it more. But
we got a handful of emails already, Charlie.
Did we really? I haven't.
Oh yeah. My phone was already just like hitting emails. Well, like before we even started Reacts, we were getting emails. One of them, the first line is the playoff is still happening, but
crazy.
Yeah. So,
all right, folks, more to come. Get your takes in. Upshot at ultiworld.com, or if you're here in the Discord, you can post them in mailbag questions channel. That's probably the best place to put stuff. And you don't have to be a question. It can just be a considered take that you want to have discussed on the air. Wait, there's people posting. Nate Sexton, my recommendation for a funny children's book to all the parents out there. And it's The Serious Goose by Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh my God.
You know, it's a brilliant Instagram post. Let me tell you why. Because it doesn't quite define what he thinks. You can kind of read what you want into it. But I think we know, don't we?
Crazy man. That's, wow. Well, I know a bunch of people have already been posting, like pros have already hit Instagram with some feelings.
It's just, it feels like you're inserting yourself into the competition in a way that is not appropriate for the moment. And I know that the rules truthers are going to hate that take, because it's just like, well, if it's there, call it. The problem is it never gets called.
The only
until
people...
these monster spots.
Uh-huh. The only people who I will be like, I will listen to a rules truther who sent us an email and said, look at all these missed calls in round one. That person is allowed to have a take on it. Otherwise, if you didn't send us that email, I don't want to hear your email about the rules being called enforced properly here.
Oh boy. So much more to come. Thank you everybody for tuning in. We so much appreciate it. Welcome to all of our new subscribers this week. It was great to have you with us. Hopefully you enjoyed. And more to come on the show this week. We've got a Kermit coming up, which is kind of brutal, but we will get you ready for Idlewild as well. Eagle just said in his Discord, quote, everyone foot faults. We'll leave it at that. For Josh, I'm Charlie, saying so long. We'll talk to you later this week on the main show.
Thanks, everybody.